And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is taking command. All of my guests are discussing how to take command, whether it's in one's life, one's business, or in geopolitics. My next guest embraces President Barack Obama's proclamation last week, this National Small Business Week, but she disagrees with what's necessary to make small business stronger. We'll examine what she believes government can do to jumpstart small business and create new jobs from her website, takecommand.org. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Susan Schreeder is the founder of TakeCommand.org, an organization that provides confidence-building information and tools to help entrepreneurs finance their companies for growth. Susan is an educator and an expert on small business finance and startup viability. She is also a personal business coach and a regular contributor of small business articles, videos, and webinars to MSN, Yahoo Small Business, and Fox Business. Welcome to the show, Susan. How are you today?
I'm just doing great today.
Oh, good. I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you for being my guest. And as I said at the outset, President Barack Obama declared last week was National Small Business Week, and rightfully so. I mean, we've got a lot of small businesses listening to the sound of your voice there. Here are some key statistics about small business contributions to the economy, just so people can mull on this before we kick off our conversation. From 1980 to 2005, firms with less than 5 years old accounted for all of the net job growth in the United States. New firms add an average of 3 million jobs in their first year, while older companies lose 1 million jobs annually. While only half of the new firms survive to the age of 5 years old, 80% of the new jobs created by these firms survive for 5 years. More entrepreneurial, rural, urban, and suburban regions of the United States enjoy higher wage growth by 58%, higher new job growth by 125%, than their less entrepreneurial counterparts in the country. And more than half of the companies on the 2009 Fortune 500 list were launched during a recession. So with such impressive credentials, why is small business overlooked by policymakers and the media as the true source of economic growth for this country?
Well, I would say the starting point is they do come around and talk about small business around election season for the photo op. But unfortunately, I would say the nature of small business and entrepreneurs is they are working and building their business. They're not really represented by any single lobbyist organization. That's why they get the short shrift when it comes to tax policy and other policies that are so-called designed to generate new jobs. They don't have a voice in Washington.
Now, what about our Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
They're largely funded by Fortune 500 companies. So, for example, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was a very big advocate of the new credit card and lobbying on the credit card issues. But all the new consumer-oriented laws that went into effect to protect consumer credit cards are not applied to so-called small business credit cards at all. Most people don't realize this, but now pay attention when you're watching TV or in your mailbox. Banks are sending out proposals, initiatives, promotions to get even people who have straight consumer credit cards to sign up for a small business credit card. Why? Because they can charge higher fees and higher penalties than they can in a standard credit card. That's the kind of problem that we have in Washington. What's good for big business is not good for small business.
Well, I would argue with you, Susan, that the Dodd-Frank bill, that's the financial reform bill to which you're referring, is probably not a well-thought-out piece of legislation, as the bill was passed before the rules were even written. But we'll come back to that for another time. So what can both state and federal policymakers do to help startups improve their chances of survival?
Well, I would say that there's got to be a slight change to how the Small Business Administration does educate and promote startups. There's a big fear that startups will all fail. But in the same way that, yes, there are high rates of failure, but what are the points of success in small business? And the job creation, and just us talking about the job generation that comes from startups, can start to change people's viewpoints including bankers, lenders, policymakers, when they recognize the power of a startup, they might change their view. Too many people think, a startup's too small, it won't have a meaningful impact on our economy, let's not pay attention to them. But you've already talked about the impressive statistics that it's the sweet spot, businesses from startup to age four, that generate the lion's share of new sustainable jobs in America. That's transformational to small communities, rural, urban, or suburban.
Without a doubt, Susan. We're talking to Susan Schreeder, everybody. But the fact remains that the 700-pound gorilla in the room is that 80% failure rate in the first 5 years of business. You know, bankers and policymakers can't overlook that because that is just a reality. No matter what the SBA does to better educate startup businesses, that number may decline a little bit. But let's say it goes from 80% down to 60%. That's still a staggering failure rate.
Well, actually, it's not 80%. The most consistent data is, you're right, one-third of startups will fail within the first 2 years, and then another third will fail by year seven. So the 80-90% that's talked about, that's really a myth. So when you look at startup viability, and I'm working on a book right now after 8 years of research on why startups fail, when you start to pay attention to the first 2 years of a startup, that's the most important point of adjusting not only public policy related to tax credits that affect the investors and the founders of small businesses, but also actually what the founders spend their money on that affects startup viability.
All right. Well, let's discuss tax credits, because I think that that's something that, local and federal government ought to take a look at. And you're on record as writing that we need to extend the tax credits. However, there's a challenge. Right now, the populists denounce this because you're giving tax credit to business, and that means that the government must be in the hip pocket of business. Or they say that, you know, we need the tax revenue to close the deficit gap. What do you say to that if people challenge you on extending the tax credits?
Well, I'd say some tax credits are worth it and do create jobs. Other tax credits are poorly designed and just a waste of time and a waste of money. So you want tax credits that genuinely do create sustainable jobs in America. A starting point, and just a part of the problem is some of the tax credits are so poorly written, or the requirements needed to achieve them or utilize them are so complex that the average small business owner really doesn't know they're there or how to apply them. A case in point, the small business healthcare tax credit. It was really loudly trumpeted as the be-all, end-all, the solution to lowering the healthcare costs for small businesses. The tax credit was supposed to be 35% of premiums paid by small businesses. It sounds good, doesn't it?
On the surface.
That business, 35%, you'll get that money back. And after April 15th, I called around the country to various accounting firms that specifically serve small businesses to see to what extent their clients were able to use this very important small business healthcare tax credit. And what I found was an overwhelming non-impact, a lot of frustration from not only the small business owner, but also the people who prepare their income taxes. Why? Because of the fine point. There's too much paperwork associated with even determining if that small business could qualify for the tax credit. And then, to the extent they did, they had to create, fill out yet another tax form to get it. And overwhelmingly, I have only found, after calls around the country, one firm that found one client that was able to qualify for this criteria.
One firm, one client. That's
it. One firm, one client. And what's interesting is the owner of the business complained to the tax guy saying, how come my bill's higher? And it's because of all the paperwork that was needed to figure out whether the business qualified for the credit.
All right. We're talking to Susan Schreeder, who is the head of TakeCommand.org. And Susan, let's stay on this subject of healthcare if we can for just a moment, please. Healthcare really will kick in the year 2012, 2013, and be rolled in over a series of years. However, with the new federal healthcare initiative that's out there, what impact is that going to have on small businesses? As I sit here today and look at it, over time, small businesses are going to opt out of providing healthcare to their employees and thrust that all onto the government, thereby creating even a bigger drain on the government. What are your thoughts on that as you see it?
Well, I would say that I'm not pleased with the initial initiative to try and embrace small business and help them manage and make the transition to healthcare. I just gave you an example of a first initiative that was designed to lower the cost associated with employer premiums for healthcare, and that was one big bust. Healthcare is highly complex. When you have to look at the cost of healthcare, not just the premiums, but the cost of healthcare. Across the board, it's too expensive. It's too expensive for a small business to pay those premiums. That's number one. It's got to be number one. You've got to lower the overall cost. But the second point is you've got to make it easy for a business owner to figure out what their options are. The more time a business owner has to spend on paperwork, be it health care, be it other tax compliance, be it federal regulations, that's time spent in a non-productive way. I'd much rather have a small business owner spending more time on creating products and services that can generate jobs, sustainable jobs that can compete in a global marketplace than needless paperwork.
Amen. We're talking to Susan Schreeder. Susan, one of the other things that you propose in your writing is lower the business tax rates, and I'm all in favor of that. We have the highest business tax rates in the world. What impact would lowering the business tax rate on small businesses have for this country?
Well, easy answer. You know, a dollar that goes to the government is a dollar that's taken away from developing products and services. Business owners have to spend a lot of time. Actually, they spend 46% more per employee in tax regulations and tax compliance than larger companies. So you can see it's not just the cash burden, but it's also the cash compliance costs associated with just writing your quarterlies and annual tax returns. That's got to change. Other nations have very simple, straightforward structures for business taxes. That's got to be number one. It's the tax rate plus the cost of filling out those forms has to go down. It's got to be the two of them. If you lower the tax rate but make compliance so complex, we really haven't advanced at all.
Oh, amen. I love what you're saying. And we're talking to Susan Schreeder, everybody, who is the founder of TakeCommand.org. Now, Susan, give us some examples of things that business people need to pay attention to if they're going to be more successful, because the entrepreneurial spirit is part of our American culture, and yet the business startup rates in India and China are now 10 times the U.S. rates. What do some of our small entrepreneurs need to keep in mind if they're going to start their own business?
Well, that's a key statistic that I worked out recently, and it's kind of shocking when I tell business people that
disturbing.
The rates of startups overseas are far exceeding the U.S. And when you look at long-term employment, we've got to do better at not only encouraging startups, but also encouraging their viability. So let's start with what do business owners do wrong during the first year of business? And the number one thing is they throw money at the wrong thing. They spend money not on, they may overspend on websites, they pick the wrong name, they assume their products might work in the marketplace, or they spend money on things that just won't provide them a positive return on invested cash. I want them working on how to get their first customer, not how to get their first 1,000 customers.
And
when
that,
they overspend and assume it's going to work, they don't have, they haven't created a structure to first test to get their first customer, improve their product or service, and then launch it big time.
All right, Susan. And
I often miss that first.
And you have many other great suggestions. We've run out of time, unfortunately. We may have to have you back in the future. But if people do want to learn more, where would you direct them to go to learn more about your writings, learn more about your help that you provide small businesses?
TakeCommand.org.
TakeCommand.org. We've been talking to Susan Schreeder of TakeCommand.org. Susan, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Terrific.
Thank you, Susan.